Hello and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. The college football season is officially over for 2024. Now we're in 2025 and the offseason is fully upon us now. And to talk about this after the Ohio State Buckeyes win the national championship, I've got Greg Medea from the Daily Progress, Jackie Franchulli from Wahoo's 24/7. To talk about this transfer portal, the wild transfer portal offseason that we've had with the Virginia Cavaliers. Greg, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, Preston, doing well. The Buckeyes and Notre Dame, I thought it would be a good game. And Notre Dame at least gave everyone that fourth quarter where they fought hard and made it competitive. Had the one great drive early, then it was all Ohio State for a little bit, and then Notre Dame made it interesting at the end. But fun game there. I thought Notre Dame fought hard.
Yeah, Jackie, how about you?
Yeah, no, definitely a fun game to watch. But also, you know, for as far as Virginia, you know, they got their own national champion going to be part of their roster today. On he committed today on Tuesday, Mitchell Milton from Ohio State. So I guess we can continue the theme of national championships now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is the thing about podcasting and the media covering things is just when you think you're in the clear, you're never quite in the clear. So, yes, this morning, less than 20.
I was on the treadmill this morning when I got a text saying, heads up. I was like, oh boy, get off the treadmill. I bring my laptop everywhere I go on
you
days
have
I'm
to.
Working because you have no choice, right? That's how this business is. So I get off the treadmill, wipe my face with a sweat rag, and into the car where I'm frantically trying to type something quick enough. It was not quick enough, but got something online nonetheless.
Less than 24 hours, way less than 24 hours after Ohio State was crowned the national champions. One of their players, Mitchell Melton, is in the portal, and he is headed to Virginia now, making that official, sign the documents and everything. UVA put out their own post about it, so you know it's officially official. Mitchell Melton had a couple sacks there at Ohio State, not a ton of playing time over his career, but he was a former top 200 prospect and a four-star recruit coming out of high school, a defensive end type, played linebacker with the Buckeyes. First, I guess we could start there, guys. I mean, we got a lot of more transfer portal. We're going to kind of do a transfer portal overview today, but we'll start with Mitchell Melton. Jackie, what do you make of him?
Yeah, so we originally mentioned him on Wahoo's 24/7 last week because he entered into the portal early on in January, and kind of the wheels started turning there earlier. Obviously, because he was still part of the Ohio State roster, nothing could have been officially like moved forward until the end of the season. But things were already starting, obviously, because he was already officially in the portal, so those conversations could already happen. And Virginia made it no secret that they wanted to reinforce the trenches on both sides of the ball. And even after picking up Fisher Kamik and picking up Kazim Moore, and even, you know, on the linebacker side, picking up Maddox Marcellus, they really wanted to add more pressure up front. They wanted to add pass rushers. That's an area that they saw that was an area of weakness last year. They wanted to get to the quarterback. So they really wanted to create that competitive depth that they lacked last year, because when injuries hit that particular position, they didn't feel comfortable with the guys afterwards, right? Because at some point they're moving guys from the inside to the outside, outside to the inside. And then when, you know, Terrell Jones went down, you had more guys inexperienced. So they realized that was an area where they wanted to add. And I think Mitchell Melton is a guy that obviously has had his injury concerns in Ohio State. So he hasn't really shown what his capabilities are. But if he stays healthy, that is quite a get for one of the last guys in this transfer class heading into the spring, because I think things will be moving forward in the spring for Virginia too, adding more guys. But yeah, this certainly is a really big get because of the potential that there is there. There's a reason why he was a four-star recruit coming out of high school, and he still hasn't lived to that potential yet. So Virginia's getting I'd better say under-the-radar kid if you're considering like what his past was at Ohio State.
Yeah, Greg, we talked so much about loading up in the trenches, one of the big targets for Virginia this offseason. Jackie, you mentioned some of the names, Fisher Kamik, you know, so Kazim Moore joining, and Hunter Osborne, Jacob Holmes, Mitchell Melton now as transfers, but also joining up with guys like Mekhi Buchanan, T.T. Jones, Anthony Britton, Jason Hammond, Jameer Carter, T.T. Jones, a long list of guys. So what have you made of just how they've reinforced the trenches, especially on the defensive side of the ball, Greg?
Yeah, Preston, and you guys know this from listening to Tony Elliott too, and being at his press conference also. How many times as he talked about during his tenure, those Clemson defensive lines, which could just rotate one good defensive lineman after the next. Virginia has not had that. At times in Tony Elliott's tenure, you've thought there's a shot that D-line could be good, especially going into this past year, right? There was a sense they had Cam Butler and Chico Bennett back. Both were healthy. It was okay, right? It wasn't the pressure applied on the opposing quarterback that you thought it could be, especially given what the two had done together, in 2022, and even flashing a pan a little bit in 2023 before Cam Butler's injury. So you're trying to get to that level that it takes to be competitive, and you look at where Tony's been in the past, and you're trying to find a way to field a front that at least looks it and can rotate in some players behind the starters that are adequate and can compete at the highest level. Like Jacob Holmes, I look at, and I don't think he's going to start given Jameer Carter returns, and so do Anthony Britton and Jason Hammond, who, after Hammond got hurt, Britton was the starter. So those two guys were starters this past season. Like, I don't think Jacob Holmes is going to start, but he was very productive off the bench for Fresno State. So that's a piece I look at in terms of the depth that's going to improve going into 2025 for Virginia. And that's what you got to look at when you see all these defensive line additions. The numbers, if you just look at the numbers and you assume health, you can't do that. But if you assume health with Mekhi Buchanan and the group will stay healthy, that's a very solid group. And maybe by playing less snaps, if you can rotate them in and out, maybe you can reduce the wear and tear and have enough to withstand a whole football season.
Yeah, look at that. That's such a big deal. And you said Tony Elliott talks about it. This has been talked about since Bronco Mendenhall was there too. Like, they've been trying to chase just getting depth on the defensive line, because that's one of the positions that you got to shift guys in and out of. And we saw Virginia do a lot more of that last season, even going to that like kind of NASCAR package that they found kind of later in the season. So having more options, always great on the, especially in the trenches, especially with the injuries that we've seen Virginia have in recent years. Before we get into the transfer portal class as a whole, I want to bring it up to you guys, especially because, like you said, Greg, you can't go anywhere without your laptop right now, and it's just been crazy. Jackie's over here asking for a break just so she can read her new book that she got. The transfer portal this year was down to 30 days, 20 days in December, and then 10 days coming up after the spring. Coaches had talked about recently shortening the window even shorter to 10 days in January. Are you a fan of that? I'm sure you are, just for a break.
I don't know if it would cause less chaos. It would just be chaos within 10 days. And then I think there'll still be chaos right after the season, because guys will be announcing that they'll be entering the portal regardless if they can officially enter the portal. And then grad transfers still be able to enter regardless. So those guys are going to be going in. So for Virginia's situation, they're going to go after the grad transfers too. So, I mean, it'll be a little easier on coaches because you have the chance to, go to your bowl prep and not having to, I guess, recruit. But your recruiting staff is already going to be working. I mean, who's some of the guys who are interested. This doesn't talk to players. I mean, you have agents now dealing with this, so you're still going to be discussing with agents. I don't know how much that would lower the workload. Honestly, I think if you want to lower the workload, is you would either move early signing day to June, or just get rid of early signing day completely and just stick with the February signing day and just reserve December and January for the portal. I don't know how much this would really affect that. I just think it'll be a very chaotic 10 days, because you've got enrollment date concerns. Obviously, Virginia is the 25th is the last add and drop day, I believe, the 25th or 26th. So you have like what, 1 or 2 weeks to figure out how long is the visits? Are you, I know, 10 window to get the transfers in the portal, but then how do you have like 2, 3 weeks for the visits? What happens with the 2026? Like, this year they're going to 2026, so next year will be 2027, 2028 classes. What does that mean to them? Are we going to ignore the high school classes in January? They couldn't even visit them in December because of the recruiting calendar change. There's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of questions. I need more answers before I can tell you if I like it or not.
I think it's still a little awkward, right? College football, the only sport where your off season has started and is in full motion before your postseason is over. And that would still be the case even with the change of the transfer portal window into January. To me, the championship game was played last night, and that was January 20th, right? That's the deepest into January the championship game has been played. So I still think you run into some issues, right? I mean, Virginia added Melton today, right? So you're still talking about. And I know there'll be exceptions for players who played in the postseason, and you can keep, you can still enter for how many ever days they decide in this next iteration of portal window if they decide to go through with that. I think it'll be interesting. I think there are probably some unintended consequences, just like there were when they initially had an early signing date for high school kids, whatever, 5 or 6 years ago. So it'll. Always something to think about.
One of the other things you have to consider is if they do move this whole window to just that 10 days in January, you're going to lose the spring, which means some guys that want to, compete for their spot and not enter the portal until after spring, well, that means they will have to be cut by the team beforehand. So that takes away their, position. So now you're forcing guys to go into portal, which happens already, but some schools are not trying to do that. Like Virginia is one school that really tries to allow these kids to get a degree before going to portal if they want. That might change things.
Yeah, it's such a weird dynamic right now because I know I can hear why coaches want this. They want more of that NFL, NBA type offseason where your games are over. Now we can focus on this. Because right now it's like doing your draft and your free agency in the middle of
Nuts.
while you're trying to prepare for a national championship game or whatever it may be, or just a bowl game in general. And but at the same time, that 10 day window, like you said before, people are still going to be making their announcements. I'm sure they'll still be, opting out of playing in a bowl game. So you probably start avoiding that situation like Marshall had this last year where they had to completely drop out because so many guys had already left. It's just the calendar, you're trying to fit a professional calendar into a school calendar. And there's going to be problems no matter which way you turn, it feels like.
I mean, unless you let the kids into school late, right? Unless you just say, you know what, we're going to have a spring window once the, or a January window once the season's complete, and we're just going to let the kids in when they want to get in. Like that to me, if the presidents of these universities, and that's a tall ask to ask them to cave on this, because then you're essentially saying, they're a little different than the regular student, which. In this day and age, you wouldn't want the student athlete moniker to be lost while they're making the NIL money. But to me, that's the exception that could really help everything. If you just say, you know what, we're going to let the kids in January 29th. It's no big deal. They can participate in spring ball. They'll be on campus, take a few classes, whatever. If you can do that, then maybe some things change. But that would require a lot of academic people to get on board.
Absolutely. All right. Going into UVA's transfer portal class now, as of right now, at the time of Tuesday, January 21st, 18 transfers coming in. That's the most in program history. Obviously, the transfer portal only a couple of years old. So, and these big transfer classes only a couple of years and kind of new in the college scene. But 18 transfers coming in right now, 15 scholarship players outgoing into the transfer portal. Guys, right now, and looking at the rankings for right now, 247 has this ranked as the number 26 overall class, number six in the ACC, Rivals, number 26 overall, number five in the ACC, and then on three, number 34, number seven in the ACC. What do you make of this class overall before we get into kind of the individual players, Jackie?
I think Virginia did a great job in just aggressively pursuing the position of needs that they need, like getting the experience that they needed, but also building continual depth, like with Maddox Marcellus, guy who has a couple years of eligibility there. And then you have to start with how they handled the quarterback situation. Anthony Calandria entered the portal. They were going to probably look for one quarterback in the portal regardless, but then you were looking at two, and two guys in the portal, that's a tall order for any program. These are guys who are going into the portal because they want to play. And by getting the two guys that they wanted, I mean, Virginia wanted Jalen Morris and they wanted Daniel Kalen, and getting both of those guys, your top two, that's a remarkable feat for the Virginia program. They both had relationships with the staff previously. Obviously, Chandler Morris, everyone knows the Chandler Morris connection, but with Daniel Kalen, I mean, Taylor Lamb I think it was his first or second spring at Virginia. He went all the way to Nebraska, saw him throw, offered him. And I even talked to Daniel Kalen's quarterback coach. It's like, yeah, I mean, the only reason why he stayed home in Nebraska because he wanted to play for his home state team. But he loved Taylor Lamb during his high school. And that's the reason why when he entered the portal, Virginia was the first school to approach him, but it was the school that he would want to go to if that opportunity arose. So that was a good relationship there. You don't talk about relationships much in the transfer portal because everything's such a quick turnaround, but Virginia's relationships really help there. I think they really attack the O-line because you can grab whatever quarterback you want, but if you don't have an O-line to protect them, I mean, we saw what could happen. So they really did a good job of getting the guys, you know, the getting Morris, then getting Brady Wilson was the star, getting Kevin Wigginton, getting Tyshawn Wyatt. I mean, they knew they had a weakness and in the trenches. And we talked about the D-line, but they also did the O-line very well. You know, this O-line is going to look probably very different than we expected at the end of the offseason. There's going to be a lot of shuffling around, and I think they attacked that. Now, they also got wide receivers, running back. There's still holes to fill. I mean, you're talking about this is the largest transfer class in the portal era, 18, but I still expect more guys for Virginia to add because there is still needs in this class. But overall, I think Virginia did a good job of adapting to this new world. I mean, we had just had Lo Davis on our podcast, and he was describing how they had to adapt on the fly on certain things, how they're learning, how they kind of streamlined the process a few times because it was such a different world. I know for me as a reporter, last year I was able to talk to you know, transfers more and more times. Well, this time I've been talking to agents mostly. So it's definitely a different environment. And the schools also had a different environment too. And you know, with Cap Futures having a more bigger role now through the House Bill 1505 that Youngkin signed, and plus with everything with the NIL, it was definitely a different environment for Virginia. And they had to adapt. And I think they adapted very well. It was a slow start. Then once they got started, they got started.
Yeah, Lo has talked about whether good or bad, agents are much more involved in the process now, in the college football transfer portal. Jackie, a grade for this transfer class?
I think so far I'll probably give it a B plus because there's still like B or B plus just because there's still positions of need. I think if I just concentrate on the trenches, I would say that was probably been a solid A because that was the biggest question of need. If you go position by position, but because there's positions of need, I would probably put it close to a B.
All right, Greg, your overall thoughts on this transfer class?
Yeah, just to piggyback off what Jackie said, I think probably the position in need you're talking about is corner, right? They probably still need some help in a secondary. That's one position that still needs to be addressed. They got Jason Brevard out of Morgan State, and then of course Devin Neal Jr. out of Louisville for at the safety spot. Probably need some more help in the defensive backfield. Other than that, in terms of a grade from me, overall take, I'd probably put it in a B plus range. Really like what they did up front, and you know there was a time it looked a little iffy, right? With what was going on up front, and Brady Wilson was the only one, and you're saying you need a little bit more around a center. But then they got on a roll after the new year. There was like three within a couple of days in Wyatt, Wigginton, and then Monroe Mills, and. You look, Mills is experienced, right? He's been around a couple of different schools by now. Started at right tackle, left tackle, has the experience. That's what I like. There's some flexibility with the personnel up front. To me, Tyshawn Wyatt, and remember, I covered James Madison when he was just a young guy getting to campus in Harrisonburg, and I saw him kind of grow up on that team that went to the FCS national title game in 2019. He played guard. He played tackle at JMU. He's made a jump too in competition level, which I think is encouraging if you're a Virginia fan, right? He's already proven he can make the jump from the FCS to the FBS. Did it as James Madison was doing it. Now he'll do the group of five to the power four. And I think that's something he's excited about. He's versatile, can play a couple different spots. You got Wilson, who's pretty much locked in at center. Wigginton can play either guard spot, though I think Noah Josie is the lone locked-in starter for that group. And then you've got Mills, who's played both sides at the tackle spot. So I think that's nice for Terry Heffernan as Virginia looks forward. As you got some time to figure it out, and you should use the spring, right? I'm sure they'll use the spring to try to figure out what's the best alignment. And then you throw in what you have back in Boley and Blake Steen and and some of those other pieces that'll compete, right? You're bringing in also to maybe raise the level of play from what you also have in-house, in hopes that maybe some of those guys you've already invested in can improve and push for playing time. That's what's also beneficial when you load up on depth and have some versatility. You'll be able to plug in the best five, instead of having guys locked into a position. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think the quarterback situation is a good one. Chandler Morris, he's been around the block, now his fourth school. Sorry about that. Now his fourth school. And I talked to him, and what he told me was he wanted another shot in a Power Four. So I think you're getting a guy who's very, very motivated. And he's got relationships with guys beyond Tony Elliott in that Virginia building. He said, new coach Schmo, the strength coach, new Justin Sparrows in recruiting, knows very familiar with a lot of the faces in the Virginia building, which I think goes to show, he'll be all in on trying to get this right for UVA.
Yeah, you mentioned Tyshawn Wyatt. He's a guy that came on the podcast last week, and really good kid, and really seems like the type of guy that UVA wants in there, and obviously versatile, offensive guard, offensive tackle, play a couple different spots. And yeah, the Monroe Mills one is kind of what shifts me up to a B plus so far for the transfer portal class. Obviously, corner is a big concern going forward, just because we've seen that it seems like every offseason, honestly, at this point, you're like, okay, but what are we doing at cornerback? And so that kind of still is continuing. I'm still a little, I got a question mark around wide receiver. I know they brought in two guys in Jamal Green and Cam Ross, but and they've got some guys in the program already that are ready to step up and make some plays. Guys like Zadarian Harrison, Cam Courtney, Trell Harris, obviously, is a big name there. So we'll see what they do. But yeah, I think B plus is a really solid grade there. And Greg, you kind of started us on the quarterback situation now. So we talked about Chandler Morris coming from North Texas, threw for over 3,700 yards last year, 35 total touchdowns, also 12 interceptions at North Texas. Daniel Kalen coming in, the backup for at Nebraska behind Dylan Raiola, three-star recruit. Several Power Four offers though coming out. He was very liked in the recruiting circles. Out goes Anthony Calandra and Tony Musket. In comes Chandler Morris and Daniel Kalen. Here's the question. It's simple. Is Virginia's quarterback situation better, and how much better, Greg?
I think it's better. I mean, you have a veteran seasoned FBS quarterback that you're expecting to step in. So you have a guy with significant experience, and he's been through it, right? He would have it's a tough when you look back at his situation at TCU, a couple of injuries, and maybe he's the quarterback that ended up, playing in a college football playoff. Ended up because of the injury, losing his job and not being able to get it back until the next season. So tough spot there for Chandler Morris. Began his career at Oklahoma. He's played in big games, played against tough competition. So he's not going to step in and be, intimidated in that jump from the AAC to the ACC. I think he'll be fine. And when you throw in Kalen, you're also balancing your classes a little bit and what goes on. You've got Gavin Frakes in the middle. Remember, he started games at New Mexico State. He was Diego Pavia's backup when Pavia was at New Mexico State. And I don't think he'll be pushing to start, but he's a good option to have in terms of a second or third quarterback, depending on how Kalen fits in and absorbs the offense. I know he said it was some similar things to what he did in high school. Out in Nebraska. So I think it's a better situation. Calandria, it was tough to watch the deterioration and him not be able to figure out the turnover thing. It looked like it early in the year that he had it figured out, and then it just snowballed on him as Virginia spiraled and played better competition, right? The Notre Dame game was just very, very tough. And it'd be tough for anybody playing against the Irish who, got to the national
Yeah.
championship game. But it he just can never figure out the turnover thing, and it the locker room. I think there were probably folks who wanted Musket to start a lot sooner than he did on that team, and that's a tough situation to be in if you're Anthony Calandria, when everybody's not hesitating if Tony Elliott were to turn to Tony Musket, and that's what he did late in the year, and you saw, the players in that program rally behind Tony Musket and be excited about his start.
Jackie, what do you think? It's obviously you bring in a two, and we've talked about how great of a haul it is to bring in two guys at the quarterback position. in the transfer portal. Chandler Morris, to me, it feels like the complete version of what they thought Anthony Calandria could be, as a kind of a playmaking quarterback guy that can also use his legs to make some plays, but kind of just seems like the older, more matured version of what they thought Anthony Calandria could eventually be.
Yeah, that's pretty much how, when I spoke to people prior to, his commitment and just during the recruiting process, that's basically how they described him to me was they can do what they wanted to do with Anthony Calandria, but had more of that veteran presence there. And somebody that also knows Tony Elliott and the expectation there a little bit through, obviously with his father, knows a little bit there. So that was the excitement level there. And like Greg says, he's very familiar with a lot of people in that staff. So there's no growing pains when you normally have with a transfer coming in. There's guys that they already know. They already know the personality. Because those are things that can cause some delays in either absorbing the offense or just learning the playbook or learning, that chemistry with your coach. He's already got that. So they're really excited. I think he's also a little bit taller too. So that was also the other area that does help. And obviously they recruited the offensive line to help him. I think one of the things that you have to kind of discuss when we're talking about the quarterback room was the communication that this staff had with not only the guys on the roster, but also the guys that they were recruiting. They were pretty transparent with Daniel Kalen. And even when you speak to him, he's like, yeah, I knew what they wanted. Like when I committed, I knew they were recruiting Chandler Morris. They also were very, very blunt and said that we want a veteran guy. You might have to sit. And, he was willing to sit when he came to Virginia. Obviously, he's going to compete. He's not going to go like, I'm just going to say he's going to compete in the spring. But having that open communication with them, but also the high school kids as well, because you're in a very weird situation where you also have two quarterback high school commitments, and you have to do a good job of managing that because although they have signed, there are different signatures now. It's not a letter of intent, it is grant of aid school or some coursework, whatever. And those aren't binding anymore. So you also have to manage that. And I think Virginia has done a really good job of staying open in those communications to create the quarterback room that they haven't had. I think when you look at it, when Tony Elliott and company came in, obviously you had Brennan Armstrong and Jay Wolfick. There were kind of like the plan A, plan B, and what's how it's gonna go. But then the next year, you not only lost Brennan Armstrong to the portal, but then Jay Wolfick decided to go to the baseball. Yes, they brought in Gavin Franks, but that was kind of like a situation down the road, and put in Anthony Calandria a lot sooner than after Tony. So the quarterback room was in disarray. It was going on to plan D, E, F, and G at that point. So at least this way, there's more of a okay. This is our plan A if in the competition, but plan A is Chandler Morris. Then you got a competition there for after that. You've got some good talented guys. You have Bjorn Jorgensen, who's been getting a lot of great reviews from analysts on 24/7. But you also have Gavin Franks, who's been in the program at that point for 2 years. You have Daniel Kalen. So it's going to be an actual competition at quarterback, and that's what you want at that position.
It feels a lot healthier, I will say that. Just kind of looking at it from this vantage point, it feels a lot healthier of a quarterback situation. It seems like there is, kind of obviously you get the veteran in Chandler Morris, you get the younger guy in Daniel Kalen, and then kind of Gavin Frakes, a guy that's been in the program, and kind of on down to Bjorn Jorgensen coming in. So it feels a lot healthier of a quarterback situation.
And
And
Cole
with
Gear
Kalen,
too.
and Cole Gear as well, yes. And with Daniel Kalen, it's a lot different to ask a guy to wait behind this guy who's in his last year of eligibility than Dylan Raiola, who just got there and finished his freshman season. Very different situation. Greg, I know you wrote for the Daily Progress kind of an outlook of the quarterback position in the ACC. Where do you kind of see Virginia right now in that picture?
Yeah, I think it's right. The two big returners in the league, I guess you could throw Haynes King in there, so three. Haynes King at Georgia Tech, Cade Klubnik at Clemson, and Kevin Jennings at SMU. Those are the three big returners. Klubnik is the headliner of that group. Then you look around the league, you've got Carson Beck now at Miami, the Georgia transfer, who could have gone to the NFL, opted not to, going to stay in school for a large payday at the U. Life's not bad. And then you end up, on a team that just had Cam Ward as your quarterback, and he's going to play there with Shannon Dawson, the offensive coordinator, getting an air raid system, a little different from what Georgia does offensively. So that'll be fascinating to see how that transition goes. And if Miami's going to put up the points they did with a new quarterback behind center, it's a big shoes to fill though, for Carson Beck going to replace Cam Ward. You look also around the league, Darian Mensah going from Tulane to Duke. That's a pretty big time addition, and that was done quickly and early in this transfer portal cycle. Really good breakout season for Mensah at Tulane this past fall. And then I'd put kind of Chandler Morris in that group, right? I'd put in terms of the newcomer quarterbacks, you probably got your three of Carson Beck, Chandler Morris, Darian Mensah. In terms of what's been done around the ACC, there's some other ones too. That are intriguing. There's some wild stories. They've got the kid at Cal now, who went to Oregon, a high school kid, right? Jackie, you probably know this pretty well. Jaren, what, Sagapatoli? If I'm saying that right, I
Yeah,
got.
that's what I think it is. Yes, Brandon Huffman has told me yes.
That's a
Yeah,
great pronunciation.
it's like an Italian accent on a,
Hawaiian.
different on
Okay.
a Hawaiian name. But anyway, what the point is, he went to Oregon, practiced with them ahead of the Rose Bowl, decided to withdraw and then transfer to Cal. Was originally committed to Cal before he flipped his commitment to Oregon on signing day. So there's a lot there. But he might be Cal's day one starter. And that's interesting. Tyler Van Dyke, the former Miami quarterback who played at Wisconsin, he's now at SMU to back up Kevin Jennings, reuniting with Rhett Lashley. So there are some fat. Thomas Castellanos, right? I didn't mention him. He bolted from Boston College once he lost his job to Grayson James, and now he's down at Florida State. So you've got some very interesting quarterback situations around the ACC, and I would say Virginia's is probably as healthy as anyone around the conference. Cade Klubnik is the most straightforward quarterback situation there at Clemson. You're looking through all the rosters, guys in and out, and it's like Clemson, just plain and simple. We got a multi-year starter back. He's the guy, and that's how we're gonna build their team. So that's kind of refreshing to see every once in a while, but that's the most straightforward. But I would say Virginia, one of the healthier quarterback situations in the conference now.
Wild to say after all of last season, what we watched for Virginia to kind of be in a better spot now. And obviously, some big names have left the ACC, and now some big names are coming in Carson Beck. And that wild situation, go to a Georgia message board and have yourself a good time right now, because it is some fun reading with all the conspiracy theories there. All right, let's get into our superlatives. With this transfer portal class, I'll go first to Jackie. Your biggest transfer portal win.
I think Chandler Morris is your easy portal win. But I'm gonna actually go with Monroe Mills. The quarterback is your big win perceptionally because you got your quarterback. Or quarterbacks in this case. But as we know, you can have the best quarterback and have an awful offensive line or an offense, and you're going to have trouble. So getting Monroe Mills was a great win. He is the highest rated guy on Virginia's class, according to 24/7 Sports. Like Greg mentioned earlier, he's a versatile guy that can play both tackles. I think he can really, really help Virginia do what they want to do since they got to Charlottesville and established the run. And if they want to create that balanced offense, it starts in the trenches. So that is the big portal win for me because that is a big step in the right direction.
I think, yeah, I'm going to second Monroe Mills here just because I think that's when everyone kind of peeked their head up and, like, what is Virginia doing over there? Because, like, that was a great win to get a guy with that much experience in a key position that you needed to come in. Greg, who's your biggest portal win?
Yeah, well, probably the anonymous donor. He's probably pretty happy. Just to be honest,
I've had some.
we got to mention it, right? I mean, that's the
Yeah.
elephant in the room. None of these players are coming for free.
I've had some
So.
great AI pictures sent to me of what the anonymous donor looks like, and they're pretty funny. I'll have to share those sometime.
Is it
Yeah.
kind of like the Tony Elliott AI pictures that's been going
The
around
Tony Elliott ones are
the
great
internet?
too. Thank you to OG Who for putting those out there into the universe every time.
Yes.
But yeah, the anonymous donor one, I think that one needs to come out next.
In terms of the players, I would go Monrell Mills on offense. And then in addition, Chandler Morris is the layup, as Jackie said. And then Monrell Mills. And then on the other side of the ball, what about Fisher Kamak, right? I mean, gosh, productive at UNLV, 6'7", can get off the edge. Cal had no clue how to block him in a bowl game, right? I mean, did you guys see what he did in a bowl game? One sack after another. He was in the backfield all night. So he seems like a player you plug and play day one also, in terms of an edge rusher making the move from UNLV, which was a winning team this past season, right? The only losses they had, Boise State and Syracuse. Boise State twice, of course, once in a regular season, once in a Mountain West title game. But he was a factor from start to finish for them, really finished the year strong in that bowl game against Cal. So impressive for Fisher Kamak. And, remember, this is a defensive line that has struggled to get to the quarterback the last few years. And if you get a guy who's proven himself as a pass rusher and can translate it to this level, man, that's a big win.
And kind of follow up on Greg, on defense, you have to, I agree to an extent on Fisher Kamak, but I'm going to go with Hunter Osborne just because that kind of kicked things off on the defensive side because of who his agents were. Because if you look at all the other guys that were represented by the same agency, you would have Fisher Kamak, but you also have Mitchell Melton. So when you have that first one from that one agency, you kind of get the connections to the other guys because that's how the world works. And I think that kind of kicked things off. So I think Hunter Osborne for me was the biggest one just because it established that connection and that relationship.
All right, biggest portal loss. Again, 15 scholarship guys went into the transfer portal. Is this a pretty unanimous vote here on Malachi Fields?
Malachi, yeah, I mean Malachi Fields.
Easy. I mean,
Yeah,
he's going to
I
be very good for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And he's going to step into that Bo Collins role, right?
And it's interesting because I can't remember the name, Notre Dame backup quarterback right now off the top of my head, but I know he's a much better prospect as a thrower than Riley Leonard. Obviously, Riley Leonard, leadership wise, and what he was able to do running the ball. But I just worry because Notre Dame has not had the production out of their wide receivers. They have not been a very good passing offense in recent years. Even with Sam Hartman that year, they just didn't get any production out of their wide receivers. Kind of similar to Penn State, what they've been, maybe to a less dramatic sense. But yeah, Malachi Fields just adds so much to that team. And he's a big loss for Virginia because right now you don't have the same dynamic you had the last couple of years where you're like, all right, we know who the number one guy is. It's Dontayvion Wicks, or we know it's, Malik Washington or Malachi Fields now. And now it's, I think Trell Harris obviously kind of is the front runner for that. But he's got to prove that he can do that at the ACC level after the injuries he had last year.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, Harris, when healthy, was really good, right? And we had heard all offseason last year, why is
Right.
nobody talking about Trell Harris? He's gonna be excellent. And to be fair, he was when he played, right? He was the deep ball threat. I don't want to put the Virginia Tech game on him too much, right? I know he had dropped a pass or two in that game, but it was his first game back from injury after missing 2 months.
And
So I'm
Tony
not gonna
Musket's
put.
first game too.
Yeah, that too. That good point. But I look back at what how he started the year, and there's a ton of potential there. That top end speed is, I mean, it's different. I think the Purdue transfer, Jamal Edrine, I think he probably fits into the field role a little more in terms of the big physical type possession receiver that Malachi Fields has been more primarily in his career. And then when you look at Cam Ross, if we're talking receivers, he's more slot, kick returner, that type of player. I know he can play outside too, but I would think of him more as a slot guy.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Best prospect in the portal class. Now, this is a little bit different than the best portal win. Best prospect is a guy that has multiple years of eligibility in the program. And Greg, I'll start right where you left off is Fisher Kamak. I love what he did last year at UNLV and just the athleticism and the frame, 6'7" as an edge rusher. He looks like a guy that has a lot of untapped potential still coming. And I thought once I saw that one, I was like, that's when I started to jive with the transfer portal class. I was like, you're getting a guy like this that's coming off a 3-sack performance in a bowl game. And I mean, say what you will about bowl games these days, but he was playing an ACC opponent. So
Yeah.
I loved what I loved that move.
Yeah, you still got to go get the quarterback, and you still got to try to block him, whoever's out there, right? So those sacks still count. To me, I look at on the on at linebacker on defense, Maddox Marcellus. I think Jackie mentioned him a little bit ago, but he was productive at Eastern Kentucky, and he's a fast, sideline to sideline linebacker. And I think, given you need depth at that position, I know Virginia returns Cam Robinson and James Jackson. You need a little more. Trey McDonald was pretty good, I thought, late in the year. But to have four at linebacker that you trust, that's probably beneficial for Virginia, especially the way Cam Robinson seemed to get nicked up throughout the year. If you want to take some snaps off him, maybe Marcellus is the guy to do it. And then maybe he starts down the road, not this year, but maybe the next year.
Yeah, I agree. Just because obviously when Robinson went down, he also lost a lot of athleticism in that linebacking
Yeah.
core. James Jackson, Trey McDonald, good solid positional linebackers, but not the athletes that Cam Robinson and now Maddox Marcellus are. Jackie, your best prospect.
I was going to go with Maddox Marcellus too.
There you go.
Just because I remember talking to our 24/7 scouting guys about his rating. And he, I don't want to say they were split, but there was a little bit of a split around the 24/7 analysts about him. But I just thought he's just an instinctive player. He's always around the football. He's athletic, and I think as when you look at him, you just see he's a football guy. He's a football player, and when I look at him, you see linebacker. I also gotta give a shout out to Jason Hammond in this run there. There was like a week there where he was really obviously they have a connection between him and Maddox Marcellus. But also even Hunter Osborne in that recruitment. Jason was was all over those guys. But yeah, definitely if you're thinking of guys with several years of eligibility, Maddox Marcellus and Hunter Osborne, to be fair too, are probably the two guys that stand out because that defense with those guys with that level, I think you can see the depth in the future too. But definitely Maddox Marcellus is definitely one that stood out as someone that's underrated, I think.
All right, well, that goes right into the next one. Most underrated in this transfer portal class. Why is it Bryce Robinson, the long snapper?
Bryce has got a good story, man. He's
I read
got
your story and both y'all's stories actually over at your individual websites. But yeah, really interesting story there. And I didn't know there was a PFF All-American at long snapper, but now I do. And it's Bryce Robinson, big long snapper. That's something you haven't seen in a while. Shout out to my guy Lee Dudley. He was not a big long snapper.
He could have played college hoops, he told me. Bryce Robinson,
Yeah.
6'7", was getting some D2 offers when he was already kind of decided he'd play football, and then made some D1 visits, he told me. But then he was funny. I think the line was like, yeah, 6'7" in basketball, there's kind of an end, especially as a big man, right? You're playing forward. He's like, not much of a future at 6'7" as a big man. So opted for football, had some pro dreams, and was recruited by Virginia last year before they settled on Peyton Bunch coming in from Coastal Carolina, and they end up with him. I think he's you got to have a long snapper. You can't not have one. So,
Most underrated, though, outside of Bryce Robinson.
for me, oof, this is a tough one. I'd probably go Cam Ross, James Madison. Kick returner, productive receiver. To me, I look at what he can do in a return game. He had a kick return for a touchdown this past season. I know last year, right, the hope for Virginia fans was Chris Tyree would change things in the return game. That did not come to fruition. Maybe Cam Ross is the answer, because some upgraded special teams would be. I thought they were improved on special teams at times this past fall compared to 2022 and 2023. But man, if they get some dynamic plays in the return game, that would go a long way for this team.
Jackie, who do you look at for most underrated?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the 24/7 rankings for the commit. So Cam Ross is actually our si second highest rated
Oh, well, I wasn't looking
transfer.
at rankings.
According to the Greg Medea rankings,
yeah. So
though.
I'm just looking here. So one of the guys that I'm a little surprised how lowly they're rated. Maddox Marcellus is one of them. That's why I brought him up because I do not agree with his rating. Another guy that's actually ranked pretty low in 24/7 that I'm not sure I agree with is Brady Wilson, Virginia's center transfer. I think his rating is a little low for what he's capable of. I wouldn't rate him that low. So I think between him and Maddox Marcellus, I think those are your underrated guys, just from looking at what people have rated them across, not just 24/7, but across other industry standards too. So I think those two are probably who I would say are going to make an impact. I mean, we realized last year what impact Brian Stevens had on the offense. I mean, everyone remembers, not it wasn't just his fault and his absence in North Carolina game. I'm not saying it was just him not playing, but it certainly didn't help, right? So yeah, I think he's going to be an underrated guy just because he's going to be one that kind of steps in, and for Brady Wilson's going to step in at that role at center. So I think he's one of the underrated guys for Virginia.
Brady Wilson's the guy I'm very high on. Rivals has him ranked pretty high, I believe. I can't remember what ranking he was there. Jackie, I know you're not allowed to talk about them, but I'll
In my
mention the
contract.
ranking. Yeah, I mentioned the ranking there. So I didn't consider Brady Wilson for this, but he's definitely someone I'm pretty high on. And before Monroe Mills got in, he was probably the offensive lineman I thought could have the biggest impact on the offensive line. For me, it's a name that I've kind of come around on since his commitment got announced. And you mentioned him earlier, Greg, is Jamal Adrien from Purdue. And only because you look back at his first year at FAU, he had a really productive freshman season. Then he goes to Purdue, which I call one of the biggest dumpster fire seasons in the Power Four level this year. Hudson Card, just really bad quarterback play all around. Obviously, their coach, they replaced him and they got a new coach now. And I think it's really, obviously, it's hard to shine in an environment like that. So I think this was a good gamble from Virginia, kind of being like, he had potential in his first stop and maybe he can do it now. And obviously they were in need of a bigger body at wide receiver after you lose Malachi Fields and also J.R. Wilson, who left the program this offseason. So he's someone, I don't know if it'll be a huge breakout, but I think he could definitely make an impact in this wide receiver rotation this year. Biggest
He's also
need
number
going.
three in our transfer rankings. Just want to say that.
Greg, clearly we're not we're a little
I haven't studied the individual player ranking because they are different, right? It differs
They are, yeah.
site to site, and sometimes drastically
They
when you
are,
have
yeah.
I mean, I think the consensus was Monroe Mills across the board. That's a big addition. Then whenever you get a quarterback, there's a consensus that that's a good thing, at least according to the analysts. But in terms of site to site and individual player rankings, it seems to fluctuate. And
Especially
that's
if the player
why,
has injuries too.
yes. And that's why I think someone said to me at the beginning of this whole transfer portal thing, right after the anonymous donor dropped the bag, they're like, they better get a top 25 recruiting class. And I'm like, don't go by recruiting team rankings to judge if this was a success or not, because every site is going to be different. And I mean, you look at them, they're right outside the top 25 right now. And I would argue, you could compare them to some other recruiting classes and say they are the top 25 class. But I just, yeah, the recruiting transfer rankings are so different. Like, I think on three, they add, players you lost plus players you gain into their transfer team rankings, and every site's got a different algorithm. So I don't put a lot of stock into the transfer portal rankings. I know I read them off earlier, but that's just kind of more for fun banter. But I don't put a whole lot of stock into it. I'm sorry to anyone that has transfer team rankings, Jackie, but it just varies so much. Biggest need going forward, we talked about it a little bit earlier. Is it cornerback across the board for the third straight offseason? No
Yeah,
doubt.
for sure. Yeah, corner, or I can argue a nickel, because since Corey Thomas is gone, and they haven't had a guy who is a true nickel on the roster who's done that role several times. Maybe Antonio Clary, who's done a little different roles, can do that. But definitely corner. I mean, they've been wanting a corner since last year. I'm talking to people, it seems like everyone focuses so much on the quarterback as a tough position to recruit, and even O-line, but man, corner is one tough position to recruit out of the portal. Everyone wants a good corner.
Yeah, it
Expensive
seems
too. Expensive,
expensive.
yeah.
Yeah. It seems like it's one of those, like, for a while, when I talked to Lo Davis, we were kind of ranking what's the high dollar positions, obviously quarterback, offensive line, pass rushers, and that corner is kind of sneaking its way up there. It's a difficult position to land and to land well. I thought last year they did well to get a guy like Kimpton Shine kind of later on, but it's a tough position to recruit, and I guess we'll kind of see what they got. But yeah, you mentioned that nickel spur position. That's the one spot of my depth chart that I try to update as new guys come in that I just like I can't quite figure out right now. Are there any names that kind of pop in your head? You mentioned Clary. I can't think of
I thought Ethan Minter, like
Ethan
I think
Minter,
Bradley Chase.
Adams,
Right?
Kiki, yeah.
You look at that, but I mean, as it stands right now, right? It seems like Devin Neal's going to step into Jonas Sanker's spot. Maybe Clary bumps back to Spur. He had done it a little earlier, right? First year Tony and Rudzinski and those guys were here, had played a little bit of Spur, but he's been hurt, so it's tough to bank on it.
And he's
Those
not going to be
two,
available for the spring either.
right, and then beyond that, you've got Ethan Minter and Caleb Hardy back. When you look at safety, Kiki Adams back and as a safety as well at corner. Jason Pravard is in from Morgan State, as I mentioned, and then you've got back is Dre Walker and Jam Jackson. Jam Jackson's probably penciled in as a starter at this point, I would think. He started, most of this past season. You need some help, right? Because beyond that, you don't have too much.
Yeah, that's one position group come springtime. I'm gonna be following them around the practice fields just to see who's working where in this group. I'm sure they'll try a lot of guys. Like you mentioned, Antonio Clary not gonna be available for this spring. So I'm sure they'll try some get different guys around, and that's kind of what the spring is for, just to kind of see where you're at position-wise. But those are our predictions for this transfer portal class. All of those are gonna be right, so you can rest assured in that. But we're gonna take a look back at our preseason predictions for last year, because this is the first time we've had the gang all back together, Jackie, Greg, and I myself, to take a look back at our preseason predictions that we made on the very first Who's On podcast. And we'll see how right or wrong we were in those. That's coming up after the break here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. And Greg and Jackie, I kind of threw a surprise at you guys. We're going to go back and look at our preseason predictions, see what we got right, what we got wrong, what we got very wrong this year. And I got to say, I think overall we did a pretty decent job kind of looking back. I had to listen back to the podcast and make sure, we all had our picks in what picks we had incorrectly. So let's go ahead and dive into these right now. Key game for the season, Jackie and I were on the same page. We had Wake Forest. Greg kind of had the cop-out answer and went with the three-game stretch between Wake Forest, Maryland, and Coastal Carolina, saying it was crucial to go 2-1 in those games. They beat Wake Forest and they went 2-1 in those games. Didn't make a difference in the end, but
Well, it gave them a shot, right? Every
yeah.
game they played was relevant, right? It wasn't like they got to November and they weren't playing to get to a bowl game. They had bowl eligibility on the line up until they lost to Virginia Tech, and that was that in the season finale. But all the way through the end of the regular season, they had a shot.
And they had some good momentum starting off the season. They had kind of fans were excited there for a bit. So they didn't finish off the season, but at least the start couldn't have gone honestly better for them. That was kind of what, when we saw the schedule, that's what we had thought they needed to do in order to have that opportunity in the second half.
Yeah, I think that is a win for all of us in that book. Best chance for an upset, though, not a win for any of us. I had UNC. I'm going to take the biggest L on that one just because of their performance in that game against North Carolina, especially because in the end, it wasn't really even an upset that they were going for in that North Carolina game. You're just trying to defend your home field against a team that had a really bad season. Both Jackie and Greg picked SMU, which in the end that would have been quite the upset if they could have pulled that off
Oof.
against Virginia or eventual ACC regular season champions. But they
I
didn't
was pretty
really
wrong on
have,
SMU.
yeah. Well, and I went back, I forgot we had recorded this right after week zero. So we saw SMU that first week and how rough they looked against that 2-10 Nevada team, or team Nevada coming off a 2-10 season. So we're all kind of in the same boat that SMU, oh, this doesn't look good. But who
Barely
knew?
turn it
Just
around.
put Kevin Jennings in a quarterback and you're fine.
Unless you play Clemson or Penn State.
Yeah.
I'm just
That is very true. But it goes to a bigger point. Virginia didn't really get that big upset. I mean, I guess that Pitt would count because that was a ranked
Pitt was
team.
seven. What
Was
was
good.
Pitt at that time? 6-1, 7-1.
Yeah. And they won at
Pitt,
Pitt too.
right.
One at Pitt. So yeah, that's true. That wasn't one
Pitt
that we
had
had.
unraveled by then,
Yeah. I don't think we considered Pitt a big upset in the preseason, is probably what we're thinking right now, is you didn't expect Pitt to be as good as they were at that point, before the things kind of went downhill for them. Season predictions, I said 6-6. Jackie was kind of going between a 6-6 and a 7-5, and Greg was going between a 5-7 and a 6-6. So, Greg, I gave you the win here,
I'll take
just
it.
because you mentioned the 5-7. Jackie and I were both gung ho. They're gonna do it. They're gonna get this bowl win.
So close, Preston.
So close. If
They
only
were
one of those
just
blowouts at the end had turned our way.
too flawed up front.
Yeah.
Just
And it's
back
the
at it.
same.
And
Yeah. Same
that's
thing that
that.
kind of happened last year. Just injuries took place and
Yeah.
kind of faded down the stretch. Passing leader, we all got right. For better or worse, Anthony Calandra was our unanimous pick because we recorded this right after Calandra was named the starter. And so obviously you pick him as the guy that's going to lead the team in passing. I don't know if by the end of the season, if that's unanimously who everyone thought should be the quarterback at that point.
Yeah,
It
definitely
was
after Notre Dame.
yeah, that was a difficult end. I talked about it a little bit earlier. I just it especially the way the locker room felt, hearing from some players that they were ready to see Musket.
Yeah. Looking at the running back position, we all said Kobe Pace unanimously here. And this was very close to all of us being wrong just because Xavier Brown had a great season and he had, let's see, 34 less carries than Kobe Pace. If he had just gotten a couple more carries and, who knows, didn't, suffer that injury in the SMU game, maybe we're talking about all of us being wrong here. But, Kobe Pace comes within 1 yard of being the first running back since Jordan Ellis to go over 500 yards in a season, and better from the run game this year, but they still couldn't crack that 500 yard mark.
Man, that Coastal Carolina game was really good
And
for
176 or 171 yards for Xavier Brown,
yeah.
I think, that
Yeah,
game.
the team was over 300, correct? Yeah. I mean, that was about as good as it gets for the running game for Virginia in the last in Tony Elliott's tenure. And that's what you look at as something impressive and something to build on going forward. Didn't have the consistency late in the year with the run game. But early in the year, there were some strides made, and maybe you look back and you think now with a better offensive line, improved group up front, maybe some more talent, some more size, maybe you can get to doing some of those things regularly.
It looked like the running back position, in my view, was probably the best since it had been since Jordan Ellis was running in 2018. Just, they had those years with Wayne Talapapa where they didn't really hand him the ball that often. And it just seemed like they had something at the running back position for the first time in a while. Excited to see what Xavier Brown can do. And we'll see, obviously they bring in Jamari Taylor coming in from North Carolina Central, who's getting. Brings a little bit there to replace Kobe Pace's contribution. So interested to see what that prediction looks like next off or going into next season. Receiving leader, Greg and I both had Malachi Fields. We were right on this one. Jackie, if only he had Trel Harris had stayed healthy.
He was having a really good start to the season. And like Greg said earlier, it was a lot of off-season noise about him. A lot of people were very excited about him. And a lot of people were excited. No one was talking about him because people were just keying on Malachi Fields. So I think if he wasn't hurt in that Coastal Carolina game, which cost Virginia so much, I am not a fan of playing a non-conference game against Coastal Carolina on the road. That was Greg, that turf was, I
Not great.
remember.
We walked
Yeah.
around that turf before the game, and we were like, when is the last time they updated this thing, man? Like, this
Yeah.
is,
One, it was really hot. I remember
it was
drive
hot
like
too. Yep.
it was hot and it was tough. And I mean, that's the game that Jason Hammond also was hurt. Sage Ennis was also
Sage
hurt. I
Ennis,
mean, it
yeah.
cost Virginia. They got the win, but it cost Virginia a lot in
What
the
did it
grand scheme of
cost?
things.
Well,
Yeah.
and to Trell Harris's injury, just to get back to the run game a little bit, when you look back at it, they lost their over-the-top threat.
Right.
So defenses could pull more into the box and try to defend the running game, which made things tougher as this season went on.
Yeah, and then you also lost Sage Ennis, your best, one of your
Yeah.
best blockers too. So that was, again, that game cost Virginia a lot,
Yeah.
if you look things. But yeah, I think I'll probably put Trell Harris as, the guy to watch this the next time we do this in prediction. I'll name Trell Harris for receiving leader.
And who knows, we might join you next time. Malachi, my other prediction that I put in here is I predicted second team all ACC honors for Malachi Fields, and I felt pretty good about that for most of the season until all of a sudden Malachi Fields just stopped getting the ball. I'm gonna take a half win on this. He still did get some all ACC accolades. What is it, honorable mention, I think.
I thought it was third team.
It
Am I
was third
wrong?
team. All right, so
Third
third
team.
team, even better. I was almost there. If they had just thrown him the ball the last couple of games, maybe he would have been there. And if Trell Harris had been healthy, who knows? He might have had an even better season because he had something else kind of attracting the attention. Offensive MVP, real quick. Calandria for both me and Greg. Brian Stevens for Jackie. Jackie, congrats on the win on this one. Not much else to say there. Under the radar offensively, Jackie went with Trell Harris. Greg, you also went with Trell Harris again. Again, I think that would have been a great pick for both of you guys
Yeah.
had he played. I like my pick still, Tyler Neville. I think he had a good year when he got the ball.
He was a good player for them. He
He
did a
was a very
lot.
good player.
He upgraded that position significantly for them, and I think he's got a pro future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, if Sage Ennis didn't get hurt, you would probably get Tyler Neville a lot more of the ball in the air, but he had to change his role so much. He had to block a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. Tackle leader, we're all off on this one again. We were like, there's no way that a safety can lead this team in tackles yet again. Jonas Sanker must have been listening to the podcast. He was a guest on the podcast at one point and explained to me why the safeties lead this team in tackling. And I think I have a better understanding now. So maybe next year I'll be more inclined to pick a safety. Who knows? We'll see. But we all pick Cam Robinson. And obviously Jonas Sanker led the team with 98 tackles. So credit to him where credit's due. Sack leader, this probably was the one we were most off on. Greg and I had Chico Bennett. Jackie, you had Cam Butler. Can y'all guess, or do y'all remember who led the team in sacks by the end of it?
Cam Robinson, right?
Cam Robinson with 5 sacks. With all his injuries and kind of, I mean, at the end he was just kind of playing pass rush situations.
They really worked with him on his blitzing. I remember writing a story about it. There's a stretch where he had a couple of games in a row with a sack or half sack or something. And I remember writing a story about it in season and how he really worked on the pass rushing technique with John Celestin, one of the graduate or what do you call it? Quality control coaches, basically, assistants, analysts, however you want to call it, categorize it. How he really worked on it to become improved on the defense on when it comes to rushing the passer. He thought it was something he had to add to his game after last season. And I think it helped him. I thought he was really good at getting after the quarterback. And he took a few unnecessary shots at some quarterbacks late in the play at times, but he was aggressive. He said, he loved setting a tone with trying to get to the quarterback. And I think at times Virginia needs a little more attitude, right? A little more toughness like that. You want to be smart with it, but I think the way Cam Robinson plays the game, like, you can't deny the kid's passion and the way he hustles and moves on the football field, especially with how banged up he was. He never used it as an excuse, just kept playing.
Greg, I don't know what you're referencing with extra aggression after the play. Jackie, 2.5 sacks for Cam Butler far outpaced Chico Bennett with just the 1 sack. I remember writing a story about Chico Bennett finally getting that first sack in like more than a year. Never got another one the rest of the way in the season. These two veterans obviously put a lot into the program. They're moving on now, but just the pass rush just never kind of clicked this year from the defensive line perspective.
No, and the injuries didn't help too. I
Yeah.
mean, Mekhi Buchanan being hurt, and then you're having, I mean, even Jason Hammond being hurt, then you got to move guys inside because you know, and Terrell Jones going inside. I mean, when Terrell Jones was healthy, and I think I remember the story that he technically started because Chico Bennett had that issue of being late to the meeting because his car was being towed, and
Bit.
Tony Elliott was like, I hoped you guys didn't notice that. Yes, we noticed. But yeah, it just he played so good, and then he was actually attacking the quarterback, and he looked really good pressuring, and then the next game against Notre Dame, he got hurt. So then that seemed to be the story of the year. So even, you know, and I think that affected the veterans because they were there a lot more snaps than Virginia would have wanted as well. So yeah, it's just unfortunate. A lot of things just didn't click for them.
Yeah.
I thought on the D line, the one bright spot was Anthony Britton. I thought he got better as the season went along. I wrote a big feature on him, kind of second half of the year at some point, and coach is very, very pleased with what he had done, and he's going to be a piece of that revamped defensive line with all those transfers. I think he's going to have to be a force in the middle of that front still.
Yeah, we talk about the transfers so much on this podcast, obviously, because we're talking about transfers. But yeah, I did a similar story just on the young guys on the defensive line with T.T. Jones now getting opportunity, Anthony Britton, Jason Hammond coming back from injury, Mekhi Buchanan, really good young guys on that defensive line. Interceptions leader, Jackie and I both had Jonas Sanker, who had one this year. Greg had Jam Jackson, who had none this year. Do y'all
Man.
remember who the interceptions leader was?
Was it Cam Robinson?
It was not. He had
No.
one.
He had
So he
one.
was
Antonio
second.
Cleary had one, right?
Clary also had one.
Corey Thomas.
It was Corey Thomas with two interceptions. Yeah,
He had the big one
still,
against Pitt.
yeah. A defense that plays it safe, kind of bend but don't break. So they don't cause a ton of turnovers, and still kind of that shows with the stats. Two interceptions for Corey Thomas this year. Yeah, he had the one against Pitt. And then I think the other one was that North Carolina?
Can't remember
Was
off the
that
top.
SMU? I can't. It was
No,
one.
I
It
think it
was
was
at home.
SMU. Wasn't it SMU?
SMU.
Yeah, it might have been
It
SMU.
was a
Yeah.
pretty incredible play that he made. I remember
I know
that
it was definitely
much.
one on the road, which is Pitt, and then one at home.
Yeah, Pitt was in front of the hometown fans and his mom in the stands. There's that whole nice little story.
Great story. Defensive MVP. We've kind of talked through it already. Cam Robinson was my pick. Y'all both picked Cam Butler. I think we probably should have recognized Jonas Sanker a little bit more during the
No
preseason than we
doubt. What were we thinking?
did. I mean, where would this defense be without Jonas Sanker? Well, we're going to find out next year.
They wouldn't have won the pick game.
No, they would not.
No.
Because
His.
he could take control if of like a minute of time. That was
Yeah.
Jonas Sanker.
Yeah, he
All
blocked a
the
field goal.
way. Yeah.
Blocked a field goal,
Intercept.
interception,
Yeah.
big
That's a
tackle for
big tackle for
loss.
loss. Yeah. It was
Yeah.
like a three-play sequence. It was wild. There's some individual
In that third
performances
quarter,
that always
yeah.
stand out in my head, and that's one of them. That'll be one of them for the coming years.
More than a couple
So,
tackles he made down the field to save big plays.
yeah, and even the
SMU
game,
game.
yeah, even the game against Virginia Tech when it seemed. When they were, you know, you saw Tony Musket still fighting, and on defense, Jonas Sanker hustled all the way down to the end zone. And I still remember him kind of falling to his knees because he was just so tired, but he did not stop. And I think that will be what I remember is just the commitment that he had, that he was fighting for every play.
Last one is defensive under the radar. I had Kempton Shine, Jackie went Jam Jackson, Greg went with Corey Thomas. All had, pretty decent seasons. They all started throughout the year, so we'll count that as a W. And then we had a quick segment at the end. Things to watch on special teams. We talked about Chris Tyree earlier in the podcast. That never took off. In fact, it went about as bad as it could, would you say?
I think the tough thing for Chris was he was hurt, right? He was hurt in
Yes.
camp. Never felt like his feet were truly under him. Had missed some games too, if I remember correctly, right? He'd missed
Yeah.
one or two games.
Yep.
I
I think three games. Yeah.
break, yeah.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the year, he was playing running back because they were out of options at running back against Virginia Tech.
And he just had such bad luck. I mean, there were times where he had those long gains and they were They were called back as
Called
a
back.
penalties,
Yeah.
but he never got momentum.
The confidence never really recovered after dealing with, obviously we take back to the Richmond game and kind of, obviously he was dealing with a lot of emotions that night, being back in Virginia, playing against his hometown team in Richmond, and then kind of going forward there and kind of, Virginia trying to get him the ball. I think, I don't know if it was like every game that he played, I feel like the first play they tried to get the ball to Chris Tyree just to get him going, and it just never took off.
And the nightmare at Notre Dame too.
Yes, that one
Returning a,
was
that that
probably
was tough to
the
watch. That was
that was
tough to
the
watch.
that was the
You
hardest
felt bad.
play.
You felt bad for him.
Yeah. Jackie mentioned the punt team when we things to watch on special teams. I thought the punt team was pretty good this year for the most part. We had some mishaps along the way, but what's a Virginia football season without, a little bit of a roller coaster ride? So overall, guys, like that wasn't bad.
No. I mean, we were in the ballpark with the victory total, which is really all that matters, right? At the end of the day, nothing else matters. Do you win?
Nothing else matters if you win. All right. That's going to wrap us up here. We covered a lot in this one. I want to thank Greg and Jackie for coming on. Obviously, we've got a lot more coming up with spring football just around the corner. Hard to say that when it's 20-degree weather outside in Virginia, but it's coming. It's just around the corner. But thank you guys for coming on. That'll do it for the Who's On podcast this week. Remember to follow thesaber.com for everything you want to read on the Wahoos, from basketball to football to baseball season coming up right around the corner. We got some stuff coming up there already. I had the podcast earlier in the week with UVA pitcher Jay Wolfolk. You can catch up with that over at thesaber.com. Also, follow and subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. We'll see you next time here on the Who's On podcast.